We often talk about the propensity of the market to make a extreme on a Friday, a new all-time high, or the high for the week, or the low for the week. Well, we made an all-time high, and now we're about 115 handles lower. Reversal or just buy the dip? They're buying the dip and the rip in Bitcoin. We're going to talk about the inflation numbers at 8:35 with Blue Putnam, Oracle after the close. Busy week, Quad Witch on Friday. We're starting to get prepared on Monday on Pre-Market Prep.
Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
Okay, investors. The truth is, we're starting in the hole. 16 handles, 51.76.50. The buck sliding a couple pennies, 102.66. Bonds up a quarter of a point, just under 122. Crude down 43 cents at 77.58. We have gold flat here at 21.85. Silver flat at 24.56. But your winner, chicken dinner, Bitcoin, that's up $2,645 at 72,400. Let's call this 72,500. We were talked about looking at the monthlies and comparing that rolling front month high, and boom, it's there. Good morning, Dennis. Dennis, I wanted you to work less and you're working more.
I know. This is what happens. I was like trading the action, watching the action just in NVIDIA last night. Interactive Brokers came out with overnight trading about 6 months ago. I've been kind of playing with it a little bit there, but Robinhood's had it for a while here too. And I believe, I'm not 100%, if maybe the chat can confirm it, I believe Thinkorswim has it too. So this 24-hour trading, it used to just be ETFs, but in some cases, like in IB and Robinhood, it's apparently spread to equities here now too. So in IB, they're trading everything. Then markets, I mean, it's, you know, you can't really go in there and say, oh, I'm going to trade, you know, something by appointment only there, because there's no market at all. But if you're trading the big guns like NVIDIA, you got a fairly active market in NVIDIA there, because you know how active it is. So I think if you're sticking with like the big thing, you know, the mega caps, you can get in and out. And it's wild. The range was wild last night. So like, bring up your NVIDIA after hours, Churchill. I'm bringing Aaron Bree here too, because Aaron's bring him in this conversation. That's interesting.
He was catching it Aaron. Too.
Aaron, how are you? How's the weekend?
Good. Happy Monday, everybody. Happy time change. You notice it was a little dark.
Oh, yeah.
I slept in today. I noticed it. I was like, whoa. You know, it's like not that bright outside. Usually the sun's glaring in my eyes at 6 a.m. and it doesn't start glaring until 7 now. So I did feel the time change here today. And I'm a little bit tired here today. But how was the weekend? What'd you do?
It was good. We had a little St. Patrick's Day celebration on Saturday. There was actually a parade here in Corktown in Detroit yesterday as well. So it was all like St. Patrick's Day week, even though St. Patrick's Day isn't even until next weekend. So I don't get it how they schedule that. But either way, it was fun. Good weekend.
Nice. Joel, what'd you do?
Oh, just the usual, you know, got a couple swims in and happened to experience the worst season in the last 40 years of Michigan basketball. We went up, Lisa and I went to the game last night and yesterday afternoon, and they just capped off a horrible season. But we were there, you know, we got to support them when they're good and when they're bad. But back here and that's it. A little bit of R&R, but boy, oh boy, it's not going to be a relaxing week here, Dennis. Key reversal? I mean, what kind of spin do you want to put on that move for Friday and following through today?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the NVIDIA, and let's talk about all these key reversals that we had and recap the action from Friday, because it wasn't just NVIDIA. It was the entire Momo trade coming off. AMD was up so much in the morning, Joel. It ran from like 205 to 227,
blasting off. I didn't see that.
AMD, huge key reversal. So when you see these key reversals, usually it signals a short-term top. Nobody knows the longer term. Nobody knows, you know, where we're going 2 years or 5 years or 10 from now. As the bears will tell you, we're going back down to where we came from, and AI is a bubble. I'll tell you that. I don't think AI is a bubble, but we can't tell where these things are going long term. Nobody's got the long-term crystal ball. But with short-term trading, when you see these key reversals, it usually indicates a short-term change of trend. So does that mean the party's over? Well, we have precedence, which is very cool. We have SMCI to see. SMCI, the wicked key reversal that it had back on February the 16th, I believe it was, if I'm looking at my dates correctly. It opened that day higher, 104.45, went up to 107.77, and then we know the crazy day that lost 277 points. Next day was ugly too. So you basically had the three-day rule there again, where you don't buy it on the first day, you don't buy it on the second day, but you can nibble in on the third day if it doesn't make a new low. And that's exactly what it did. And then we know, obviously, out of the S&P, and now it's, you know, it's back up again. So is the story over here? No, I don't think the NVIDIA story is over. I don't think the SMCI story is over. I don't think the AMD story is over. Is the story cooled off? Oh, yeah, it cooled off big time Friday. Stocks don't go straight up. They don't go straight down. Wouldn't it be easy? Wouldn't it be so easy if stocks just went straight up, Aaron?
They were going straight up on Friday off the open.
There's no impact whatsoever. They just go straight up. Wouldn't that be easy? Wouldn't that be a great market to trade where you don't have whipsaws, you don't have shakeouts? We just go straight up or straight down, and that's it.
Yeah, and we often talk about, or you hear people talk about, what's like the max pain trade? What would cause the most pain? And maybe it's that NVIDIA keeps ripping all the way up and looks like a for sure thing that it's going to 1,000, bringing more people in, bringing all those FOMO buyers in, saying, okay, well, I haven't been in it now. Screw it. I'm not going to miss it any longer. I'm going to go ahead and buy now. And then all of a sudden it drops 100 points. So to your point, Dennis, like, does this mean, oh my God, we all have to sell and get out of NVIDIA right now? No, probably not. But it will be interesting to watch to see if that if this trend continues and how low NVIDIA will get this week. If it dips much lower, I might have to get it in buy. And like you said, you know, hope for the same kind of pattern like we saw in SMCI.
It's possible it could have that pattern again. It's possible it could continue to dip too. I mean, stock was $100 stock 2 months ago. So, you know, it could go down to 700 and bulls would still be in control. It could go to 1,000 and bulls would still be in control. It is really choppy. Joel, bring up that chart, please, that after hours chart, because this after hours movement is insane. You won't see the action from IB Robinhood.
No, you won't.
Because this is the actual exchanges that open at 4 o'clock. But even on the exchanges, the action in NVIDIA has been pretty incredible here. I'm still not seeing your charts, Joel. I'm not sure. You got a problem. Yeah, we haven't seen your charts all morning. We're still seeing our mugshots. I'm not that
you're
pretty.
You're kidding me. You guys
I'm not that cute either,
you
unfortunately.
You haven't seen my charts
all
day?
AB's cute, though. So we have AB here.
Oh, man. I thought, maybe that's that Slack message. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, so we'll get the NVIDIA chart up here.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So, you know, we're talking about those key reversals. You can see that clearly Friday. We sold off significantly after hours on Friday. Then there's news of a lawsuit. But we have been all over the place. And the IB Robinhood, and chat, you might be able to help me because people are saying, how do you chart that? I don't know how to chart. I don't think
IB has capabilities
yet. I'm just like watching the action. I saw it as low as 820. I saw it as low as 820 last night. I saw it up to like around that same high as at 892, 893. I think after hours on regular session, looks like it got up to about 897. So it's been a wild after hours action, despite the stock kind of going where it went out, you know, not far from where it went out. It has been nothing but wild, the action in NVIDIA overnight. So, you know, so how do you trade it from here? I think if you're a longer term investor, I haven't sold any of my long term shares. You can day trade it. You can do all kinds of other things in there. I say, you know, own it and trade it. Why not do both?
Boy, I'm trying to get the, all right, so this is the 4 o'clock opening, like right in here, this area. And then I went to the 15 minute chart. This is when we peaked about quarter to six. So there's the price action just since 4 o'clock. You did have a nice, S&Ps are leaking here big time. I watch out here on the bids, Dennis. Yeah. And then I just noticed when I had my charts up and I wasn't sharing with you, what a great level you have in SMCI right now. I have not seen this in a long time. You have I'm just going to call it a flat out triple bottom here at 1090. Look at that. The last three lows right here. Boom, boom, boom. You've traded below in the pre-market. I think that would just be an amazing stand by the bulls today. This thing holds 1090 and rallies. But, man, underneath that, you have some major room on the downside. But steady leak here in the S&Ps. Yeah. We are now taking out the pre-market low. Man, to think about what happens now is the complexion of the technical analysis changes, right? Because not now everyone's a winner. I texted you on Friday. I saw that reversal, and I was like, those are the kind of candles where Triple D gets a little bit, you know, gets a little bit on a trigger on the sell side.
I don't contemplate. I talked about it on the show to contemplate talking about selling some, but. I did sell some back at 670 or 680, like that the extra part that I had bought. But of my original purchase, I haven't sold any yet. And the second purchase, I haven't sold any yet. So, and I've been trading it too. You know, I was trading it last night. I had a good trade on it last night, you know, just trading it in the IB after hours. So I've been trading it too. But my core position, which is in my long-term portfolio, is still intact. Now, I don't know, like, do you sell in the rallies? Do you get out? Is this it? I just, you know, get thinking about that long-term picture. It's hard to think that, you know, the story doesn't continue here and the stock doesn't eventually pull an SMCI and eventually make new highs again. So trying to separate the trading aspect. If I was in it for a trade, yeah, Joel, when it makes that key reversal, I'm probably, you know, looking to hit the exit buttons. But you sometimes got to, you know, separate the trading and investing to a certain extent. You know, my best investments are the ones that I don't trade, you know, and Warren Buffett, you know, makes fantastic quotes there too. Somebody quoted last night on Twitter, I forget who it was, but you know, the stock market's basically, you know, a vehicle, he says, to transfer wealth from the impatient to the patient. I mean, this is the case with my long-term investment portfolio. The stocks that I was patient on, like the MasterCard that I held for 10, 12 years, the Apple that I held for the better part of a decade, the Google that I held for over a decade, those stocks kind of made my long-term portfolio. And those times that I was like, yo, I can get out of this, and then I don't get back in is the biggest issue. My timing on the exits is usually pretty good. The problem is I don't get back in. So it's tricky to time. If you're a long-term investor, buy good companies with reasonable valuations and just hold them.
We did mention it off the top, but Bitcoin, I mean, the market's showing some weakness, but Bitcoin sure ain't. At 71,500, some bullish news that in Europe, they're going to start allowing some of these Bitcoin ETFs as well as the UK opens the door to crypto exchange traded products. I mean, could Bitcoin be a signal for us here if we see Bitcoin start selling off? Because if nothing else, Bitcoin is measure of speculation. People seem to be okay, sure, willing to take the speculation on Bitcoin right now. And I was kind of, I mean, when I saw all the different meme coins and stuff running, I mean, this and that coin up 10,000%, you know, last week, I saw a bunch of different tweets about that. Someone throwing $300 into this tiny coin that was worth 0.001 and making like 100,000 overnight. I was like, uh-oh, this is starting to feel a little bit like 2021. I don't know if there's any correlation there or what, but usually I think when that speculation point hits like a high, that a lot of times you have that pain following shortly thereafter, and could be something we're seeing right now. But either way, Bitcoin and the big ones, Ethereum, Bitcoin, are still doing well. And I mean, Coinbase up now another 6% this morning. Coinbase's chart has just been incredible. Coinbase, I was looking at it today, this morning. Coinbase at one point got below $40 and is now trading above, what, 260? Like, this thing, if you got in when everyone else was too scared to touch this, you were rewarded very well on Coinbase. And Bitcoin, for that matter.
Bitcoin, because it has went up so much, I was just looking at it, has approaching 5% of my long-term portfolio. Ooh. Yeah, it started as like 1. And it's went up quite a bit. So I'm holding, though. I'm a holder.
That's
here.
An investment, like Buffett, like you just said, right, Dennis?
I was not a believer. We know I was not a believer in Bitcoin for a very long time. And I'm a believer now. I don't think it's going away. I don't know. All these other crypto coins, you got to be careful. You know, Dogecoin, all the other ones that we've poo-pooed for a long time. They have, you know, little pops and drops here. But I think the Bitcoin, it goes higher. I think we're going to see 100,000, maybe even this year. I don't know where it goes. And again, we don't have a crystal ball. And again, yes, it is speculation. It's all speculation. You know, the market is speculation. But I mean, I just think there's so many younger people who believe in this. It's spreading. The ETFs are not going to stop this. Like, the ETFs aren't going to slow it down now that you have those out there. Now you have other investors looking, you know, at putting a little piece of this in their long-term portfolio here. Mark Yusko on our show, Joel. Remember, Mark, we used to have Mark. We should have him back.
He's like,
just get off zero, you know? And when he was saying that, that's when me and you started trade Bitcoin a little bit. And I put a little bit in the long-term portfolio, getting off zero because what, you know, I poo-pooed it, but I'm like, what if it isn't a zero? What if this is for real? I'm not thinking we're going to transact in it, but I don't think this is something that's just going to go away. And it's apparent it's not going to go away. It's been around here for a long time now. So I'm long Bitcoin. It's about, shocked that it's that high. Actually, it's about 5% of my long-term portfolio when I'm looking at my holdings. So I have some cash in there too, though. So of the overall account, it's not that high of the overall account, because that's of my active holdings, and I have some cash in there too. It's probably about 3%.
It's been up 10. The futures have been up 10 out of 11 days, and I think that the thing that was really impressive is when it had that $5,000 down day, it came back. Right away. It came back 5,000 the next day. And then, but I will say the open interest is starting to come out a little bit. So you do have some people selling in the strength here. I did mention I wasn't going to, you know, I was going to look for the all-time high in the rolling front month contract. And that still comes in at 73,790. How high did we get today? Pretty darn close, 73,200. So close enough if you're taking the target. Also, folks, I let you down last week. I didn't tell you about the rollover on Wednesday because it came over in the futures contract. And we are now, this is the June. When I'm showing you the June, they're entirely different numbers because of the factors that we've discussed. Quad Witch on Friday, we talk about, you know, major turns in the market on these quadruple witch expirations. We've had a lot of turns where it's closed strong and went higher. But right now, showing a little weakness here on Friday of the Quad Witch week with the jobs number. And then starting out this week, we're starting out in the red too. And with that all-important inflation data coming on Tuesday and Thursday.
Well, let's move away from the crypto. A couple other stories here. I'll just take over for a second. We should talk Boeing here, too. We'll move right away from technology. Go ahead, Aaron.
I had it pulled up right here. The Department of Justice is opening a criminal investigation into the Alaska Airlines. That's the one where the door panel blew out mid-flight, which is just this is just another piece of the barrage of kind of negative news on Boeing that we've seen in the last few months. I don't know if you guys saw last week, but there was another video of a Boeing taking off and then a wheel fell off and fell on some cars out in San Francisco. But either way, I mean, like you see a lot of probes and investigations, but this is a criminal investigation. I mean, I don't know if that seems a little out of the norm here, but the Wall Street Journal reported that on Saturday, stock trading down more than 2% this morning. I mean, again, Boeing has already been going through some of these probes and whatnot, but this looks like a different thing and a criminal lawsuit. Never a good sign if you're an investor holding this company. But who knows? Maybe at some point, right, that you come in and buy it when all this bad news is going on, that eventually a couple years down the road, you look back and say, hey, that was pretty smart. I don't know.
And that's what they said 2 years ago. And the stock really isn't up that much. I mean, if you picked up at 100, you're doing good. But if you picked it up at like when it went from 400 to 300 to 200, now it's 194. I mean, it came back to 250. I think you're still sitting here thinking, wow, this has been the dog of all dogs. The wheels got to stop falling out. The investigation's got to stop. They got to build planes that don't have parts falling off of them. That is the main problem here. Technicals, Joel, don't look great to me. I'll throw
No. Look at that. You had the drop down, and then look at that long consolidation. And now you're losing that. You're losing that $200 area. You're trading in the red. It always seems to get some kind of bounces, you know, intraday and stuff. I see nothing as far as multiple lows in the same area until you get to the 190 area. And I'll just give that minor support. But man, all those lows, 200 bounce, 200 little under bounce. Man, you got to get back. A lot of people like to see green. It's just like going along, you're really fighting the news flow. I mean, like, you're not going to wake up one day tomorrow. You're not going to go long, and they're going to say, everything's fine with these planes. Everything's fine with Boeing. You know, they're going to crank out 800 planes next year, which I know is an outrageous number. It's just like you're fighting like that, you know, that NYCB. Like I said, I'm not going to fight the news. The news is bad. Maybe it's going to turn out to be the greatest bank ever and go up to $20. But fighting the news and fighting negative news, you know, fighting positive news and NVIDIA trying to short it, what does that get you?
I trade. This is how I trade, on expectations of news flow too sometimes. You know, like, you know, NVIDIA is probably going to get more analysts upgrading the stock or more analysts chasing the price and raising the targets because analysts chase price. And the exact same thing works on the downside. It's why trends are hard to break, because they pop up a little bit and then you get another downgrade because the analyst community has it wrong. So it's all that. But, you know, with the news flow here, I mean, what's the next part of the plane that's going to fall off? So, and every time the plane loses a part, the stock goes down. So there's issues just with, obviously, even in their internal checks and controls here, they can blame other companies that aren't putting the parts on right. But it's still your planes. It's your planes that the tire falls off of last week. I mean, that is not bringing confidence into the industry, not bringing confidence into your stock. The technicals look not good here at all. Stock was consolidating for a long period of time around 200. This looks like a technical breakdown to me. It needs to pop back here quickly, or otherwise, you know, we could be in this room to 180 here talking. So I think if you're trading Boeing today, you want to see it snap back. Maybe the overall market can snap back. The market has been doing that a lot. You know, people are buying the dip here today. But, you know, we've run quite a bit here on other stocks. Boeing hasn't participated at all. The relative strength on this thing is terrible. You think about the IWM coming up, 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 and making new 52-week high yesterday or Friday. Boeing, not near a 52-week low, or at least a near a three-month low. So if you like to buy stocks with relative strength, this is not one of them.
Do you know how long this has been going on, though?
Years.
I mean, this was in 2019. Yeah. I believe it was March of 2019. I believe India, wasn't there a fight?
Yeah, you had two big crashes in the lead up to COVID, and then COVID hit, which of course crushed demand for new planes. So you had like just a bunch of bad news for Boeing stock in the span of a year, and it went from what'd it go from there on the chart there, Joel, from like 300 to 100 and.
400.
Yeah, I mean,
the all-time high, I remember it was March. I can remember talking about it. All-time high was 446.01. That was in March. And then during COVID, it hit $89.
And the company was talking about, all right, there were talks about Boeing acquiring Spirit AeroSystems, ticker SPR, which is the one that's been making some of these bad parts. So it's
if
you put two companies with a lot of problems together, does that mean they're going to fix the problems and get better? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, but either way, Spirit AeroSystems, only a $4 billion market cap. So if Boeing does make that purchase there, then that shouldn't take too big of a hit on its, Boeing's probably got the cash for that. Other news here, we did get an upgrade on Netflix from Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer hit Netflix with a new price target of more than, I think it was $7.25 here. So it's not all bad news this morning. $7.25 price target from Oppenheimer. Again, speaking of Oppenheimer, if anyone watched the Oscars last night, I know, Joel, you said you were watching?
No, I didn't. But you're like, you said to be on the pre-market show, you're like, Netflix, upgraded Oppenheimer. And I'm like, Netflix didn't make Oppenheimer. A little bit of confusion.
Do you watch on Netflix? What is it on? Prime? Maybe it's on Prime.
No, it's a Universal Picture. You had to go to, I saw it on a plane. I don't know what kind of plane.
No, I watched it, I think, on Amazon Prime. It was on Netflix or Amazon Prime. It's the two I have. So I have Disney Plus too, but nothing's on Disney Plus. I think I must have watched it on Prime.
I mean, there's some days to give upgrades and there's other days to give upgrades. I would say maybe this is like the other day. I mean, you could buy into this and think Jeffrey's making the greatest call ever. I would just look at Friday's high was way out there, so it's hard to throw that out or hard to think it's going to come into play. But 608.51 was your close on Thursday. I know you traded up to 612 there, but I don't know. I don't. This doesn't feel like the greatest day to be chasing a stock off an upgrade.
I disagree on this one. Okay. Just on the technicals. Not. I don't have a position. I probably not intend to get a position. But it's been consolidating here. Sometimes when a stock is in consolidation, it needs a vote of confidence. And I think you are getting that here today. The market is not helping it. I mean, if the market continues to go down, that's not helping your cause at all. But if the market reverses, a stock like this, it's holding up fairly well in the day because is it an upgrade? Is that what it is? Or a target change?
Let me get that thing.
I didn't look.
I think it was an upgrade.
Let me look.
Oh, maintains outperform, raises price target.
Just price target raise, not an upgrade. Just price target raise.
From 615 to 725. So it's a pretty significant.
Yeah, so it's getting some headlines.
You know, it's almost
and they're talking about in the notes. So I'm just opening up and trying to look at the note here too. Password sharing crackdown. They're talking about that helping the stock, which we talked about on this show. You know, back when the stock was 300, it's been helping it. That's still obviously a story here. Again, valuation probably keeps me out of this thing. It's not cheap. I mean, if you're going to pay 40 or 50 times earnings, I think there's other stocks to be involved with here. But from a technical perspective, I think the bulls are in control as long as this thing holds above 592. And maybe this vote of confidence can get the stock breaking out.
Got it. Well, let's flip through some other news we have this morning. We don't have a lot of earnings this week. We do have, who is it, Oracle after the close today? Let's see. ORC.
Yes.
Yeah, Oracle is after the close today.
Oracle and Asana are the two big ones that I see. If you like trading Vail Resorts, that's also on. Casey's Food, General Stores, we're reaching here. Casey's General Stores. There's not a lot reporting tonight. So Asana and Oracle is the big one. I am still long Oracle in my long-term account. I sold half. I sold half last week because I didn't want to take it into the print. It's starting to get, you know, so I'm probably going to hold half of it through the report. I don't mind holding a piece. I just didn't want a full-size position going in through it. I bought it on the last earnings dip. And, you know, it's come up. It's been pretty good. It's just been consolidating here, though. And if the market's going to start to go sour here a little bit, maybe it's got to be cautious. But valuation's not crazy on Oracle here. I think if it does go down, it's probably one of those that eventually gets bought on the dip again anyways, is what happened last time. And sometimes they come out and surprise you, too. So coin flip earnings report here. PE on this thing on a forward basis is only 18. So it's not crazy price. PE on the current market is 31. So if you're looking at the current PE, you're like, ooh, it's expensive. But that forward PE, those earnings are expected to go up. Probably AI helping it here too a little bit. Expect to go up a bit. So earnings, big earnings report for Oracle.
And going over to Asana real quick. I mean, this is one that I used to be in and trade. And my reason for getting in was because of the CEO, how much stock he was buying. Now, I mean, I'd have to crunch some numbers real quick. But Asana at a $4.2 billion market cap, I think Dustin Moskovitz, the CEO and co-founder, has put in now way more money, has bought, you know, has put in like billions and billions of dollars, probably more than the current market cap. So he's probably underwater on this a little bit. I don't know how common that is on the market, but I'd venture to say probably not that common to have a CEO who's put in, say, I'm just going to make up a number, say he's put in $8 billion buying the stock, and now the stock's trading at a $4 billion market cap. I mean, these software as a service plays, like some of them have come back pretty well. Asana has not at all. We use Asana here at Benzinga. I personally, Joel and I were just talking about it on Friday. Like, we both feel like we don't get that much utility, that much value out of it. So just based on that, I've gotten a little bit less bullish on the stock. But I mean, I guess if you're Moskovitz, you're really hoping for a good report here.
I was on it for the first time in probably like 4 or 5 years. And I had to call Aaron because I was just looking for one thing information. The only thing I ended up doing on it was changing people's due dates on a project and messing it up. I had to let them know. So I don't know. I don't know if it's just organization or things like that, but that guy has bought a boatload of the stock. I would just look at it, $20. If it could break above 20 here, you've had three tops, four tops in that area going back. That's also the high of the year. Coming back on the downside, you've seen pretty good support at the $17 area, four lows under 17. So that's been the trading range for the middle of the year, you know, for almost the whole year. bumping up against the upper part of that trading range in Asana.
And again, to your point here, I see the insider purchases all the time. I mean, there's no CEO that has bought more stock in his company, I'm going to say, on a percentage basis, maybe not, maybe on a nominal basis, but this CEO just continues to come in. The Facebook obviously made all his money off Facebook, left Facebook, formed Asana. Net worth, I was just looking it up, is worth $18 billion as of October 2023. So, when he's buying, millions of dollars worth of this, it's still just a fraction of his overall net worth, but he's putting his money where his mouth is. And, I'm impressed, when a company, you got a CEO that continuously buys your stock. And if he really has put in more money than the company's worth, just because he's been buying the stock higher, that's even more impressive. He believes in the company. He believes it's going to turn around here eventually. And maybe he's going to be right. I mean, he's the CEO. So I'm with you, Aaron, to a certain extent. I've seen all those CEO buys and kind of wanted to buy Asana myself just for those reasons. But then I always go look at the valuation and I can't even figure it out because it's never made money. So it's hard to value something when it doesn't make money.
Yeah. Is it? Go ahead, Aaron. I was going to say, they do have a high valuation, so it's not like anyone's going to come and scoop them up, right?
Price to sales is 6 or 7 times, so it's not insane. But I don't think, have they ever been profitable? Because I've checked this a few times, and I've never seen Asana with a normal PE. It's just like dash, because they are always losing money. So I don't think they've ever made money, Joel. So it's always hard to, traditional valuations, not just looking at, price to sales metrics or, tangible book or anything like that. I like to look at, what are they making? What am I paying for those earnings dollars here? And, in this case, that's impossible to value because I don't think they've ever made money.
Here's another interesting thing. When they first came out, the Q4, they've been out. Yeah. Going back to, this is going back to 2024. I mean, they're basically flat year over year here with their revenues, and it's only $168 million. I mean, that's not a lot of money. I mean, they're not like and that was the thing with Twitter for the longest time. It couldn't make a lot of money. Like, it got to $1 billion, and then we went down to get to $2 billion. And remember how it just sputtered like that?
Yeah.
That's kind of the way it feels here in Asana.
Yeah, definitely. And it's some people in the chat pointing out it's kind of worrisome if you're looking at Asana and it didn't participate really in this broad-based rally that we've had this year, because whether you're looking at other tech stocks, other SaaS plays, other small cap stocks, basically everything else at least ran a little bit and, has maybe start to come back now. But Asana has just not been in favor whatsoever. Again, we'll see earnings after the close. Maybe a big report is what it needs. And then, if you get a pop up and on a technical standpoint, then it could get some people excited. But trading right below $19 a share right now. I remember, during COVID when this thing, I was like trading options on this thing when it was above $100 a share. Been a long way since then. We do have, let me pull up some of the other upgrades and or analysts.
Yeah, ratings. I know we don't normally have this chance because it's so many bloody earnings that you don't have a chance to look at this other stuff. And ratings move stocks, whether you love them or hate them, they move stocks.
Yeah, so we have, Truist Securities upgraded Procter and Gamble to buy, raised price target to $1.75. We don't really talk about Procter and Gamble too much on this show, but not a huge price target increase from where the stock's currently trading at $1.75. It's at what, like $1.60 right now? So you're looking at a little bit less than 10% there. But Truist Security with the upgrade on Procter and Gamble.
Okay, dividend 2.32%. These stocks may start performing better if we actually get interest rates coming down. The reason for these isn't so much that they need lower rates because they're going to fail like some of these smaller companies. They need lower rates just because they're traded like, as alternatives to stocks. Staples, defensive, we're in it for the dividend. These are cash cows that don't grow much here. Those stocks do better in lower rate environments. So in this, and you've seen recently here, you can see the recent run up. We're running up into, the potential cuts here. We know it's had a bad 2022. If you were just, blindly looking at what the Fed was telling you at the end of 2021, you'd sell stocks at the end of 2021 and you'd be buying them now because you can see that, we're getting towards the end of the raising cycle here. So Procter & Gamble's not far from all-time highs, been an unbelievable performer. The valuation has always kind of kept me out of this one too. it's starting to get a little more reasonable, but it's still, you know, you're looking at a P forward P on this thing at 23. So it's just, you know, and when you're getting 6% on cash, this is why I have some cash in my long-term portfolio. I've talked about this. It isn't that I sold all my growth stocks. It's that I sold my 5% dividenders, my 6% dividenders, like the, you know, stuff that I was holding just because I wasn't getting 1%. Why, you know, sit in 1% cash when you can get 5 or 6% in an XLP or XLU? You know, it's just seemed like the smarter play. So I sold all my utility stocks. I sold, you know, a lot of that, my preferred stocks, and I put it just into hard cash. So now it's like, well, you're going to start to see rates start to come down. Some of that cash should maybe move back into some of these stocks. So maybe the time is right to start nibbling into some of these things. But Procter & Gamble is just not that cheap.
Recent high of the move is right under 162. That's where you're opening. 143,000 shares have traded. Only a couple, you know, a handle and a half, buck and a half to clear out on the book. You know, if you're going to be getting all crazy on this upgrade, looking for the all-time high, which is like a quad top on the monthlies at the 165, I'll be looking to hold a 162 bid here for Procter & Gamble, kind of bucking the market up here, up $1.65, but opens up 162 offered. I'd be like, oh, a little bit more work to do. Opens up 162 bid, then let's ramble. Let's get up. Recent high of the move has been already at the recent high of the move. That was 161.74.
All right, well, no economic data this morning. We talked about not a lot of earnings after the close as well. But tomorrow, we'll get some fireworks CPI report. And we've got none other than Blue Putnam hanging out with us backstage to talk about, to preview this inflation report tomorrow. So without further ado, let's go ahead and give Blue our special pre-market prep welcome and talk to Mr. Putnam when we get back.
Good morning, Blue. We usually don't have you on a Monday, but we have the job on Tuesday and Thursday, so we just wanted to check in with you ahead of time. How you doing today, Blue?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Yeah. You know? What are all those books you got there? Are those economic books or fictional books?
They're about half economics and half anything else.
Okay. All right. So before we get to the inflation numbers, you sent me some stuff on the Fed Reserve's dual mandate, full employment and price stability. So why don't we just start with that? Boy, I mean, that could be like a half hour discussion, but take us away, Blue.
Well, we know the Fed has this goal of full employment and price stability, but it's very interesting to see what they actually think about it. So if you go to the next slide and that, yeah, the, you know, at full employment, every metric that we're going to look at is fine. It's, you know, labor market is in great shape. Price stability, well, we're not down to 2% yet, but we almost are. If you take out owner equivalent rent, we're there. We're not there on the core, but we're below 3. So we're, you know, the Fed's in pretty good shape. So I want to take a minute or two and talk about the long run perspective of the Fed. So next slide. So this these are words from the Fed. They basically say, look, we don't know what the full employment rate is, and so we can't set a target for it. We just have to be data driven and figure it out. OK, that's what they say about full employment. So let's see where we are. Next slides, charts. Job openings. We pay a lot of attention to job openings. They're back on pre-pandemic trends. The quit rate is back. I think we skipped one slide, so go forward to number 5. Yeah, there we go. We're still under 4% on the unemployment rate. We're still creating a couple of 200,000 jobs a month. Most of us, myself included, think, you know, we're not going to create that many jobs in the second half of the year. But that's because the labor force isn't growing as fast. So there's not as many people to fill these jobs. The economy is actually fine. So these are just great numbers. Slide down to number 7. We'll look at participation rates. This is interesting because the red line is the labor force participation rate for everybody, all ages. your 90-year-old grandmother is in this one, okay? And as the economy boomers retire, they don't come back in the workforce. They're not quite as many young people. Then the labor force participation rate that we always see, 62%, whatever. Don't look at that. You really got to look at what the situation is in the age 25 to 54. This is the backbone of the workforce. And participation rates are pretty much back to where they were. They dramatically increased in the 60s and 70s. That was women coming into the workforce, but now we're back. So labor force participation is, I think, in very good shape. And on the right side, you have the labor force growth. And, you know, that's only about 0.5% a year. So if you think about real GDP, it's really the growth in the labor force plus the growth in productivity. So if the labor force is only growing 0.5%, we're probably, you know, we're a 2.5% potential economy. But that's where we are. So it's pretty good. So the Fed can check the labor market box. Let's go to price stability. This is the one that's fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm quoting here from the Fed. The inflation rate over the longer run is primarily determined by monetary policy. Hence, the committee has the ability to specify a longer run goal for inflation. I just can't even begin to buy that. I know that monetary policy is extremely important, but determined, you know, it's not a stereo system, man. They got lots of other things going on. You've got the labor market issues. You've got supply chains. You've got the fiscal stance of the government. So I believe that in about 2026, give myself plenty of time, we're going to come to a much more flexible target and not talk quite so much about this 2%. But anyway, let's see where we are. Next slide. So on the Fed's core PCE, this is the one they like. We're down to 2.85%. And if you take the last 6 months, average it, multiply by 12, we're at 2.46. So, you know, we've come down, but we're not quite there. And then look at slide 10. This one is kind of interesting. This is headline inflation. So this is what's coming out tomorrow. And, you know, we're down at 3.11 year over year. And you can see it's kind of starting to zigzag. It's getting tough to get below that 3. The only reason it hasn't gone below 3 is something called owner equivalent rent. We've talked about that. It's confusing. It's lagged. It's messy. It really shouldn't be there. And if you take it out, you're under 2% since June, last 8 months. And then the last slide, just to set the baseline, food and energy are no problem. And the core inflation rate is well under the Fed funds rate. So if the Fed wants to cut, they can do it now. If they want to wait on a little more evidence, then they can wait. But they are in that range where it's totally flexible now for them to cut. So that's kind of the baseline.
The owner equivalent rent, that's the alternative to putting housing prices in there. Is it not, Blue? Like, that's why the CPI doesn't include anything with housing, correct? Just this owner equivalent rent?
Well, it's not housing prices. They call tens of thousands of people up on the phone. I have no idea who answers that call. And and they ask them, if you had to rent your house to yourself this month, what would you charge?
Yeah.
These people don't know. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they try to standardize this. They know what rents are in different kind of apartments, different locations. So they make an effort to make it a decent thing. But it's not house prices. But house prices do affect the attitude of the homeowner answering that question. If your house price has gone up, you're probably going to say, I'd have to pay more on rent. That's right. Not true. We know that rents are starting to get soft. So I don't believe in taking numbers in and out, but I do in this case, because this is 25% of the CPI. It's 40% of the CPI core. It's just way too important to let one bad number run the game. And by the way, everybody knows this. So the Fed's fully aware of this, but they're kind of locked into that 2% target talk. And, you know, they don't want to be seen as waffling. So they're delaying.
Blue, I have another CPI question for you here. And I read this thing from the Bureau of Labor Statistics talking about shrinkflation. And they're talking about that they do include some shrinkflation in the prices of the CPI. But then I was looking and they were estimating shrinkflation to only be 1% every 100 years, like 0.01% a year. And I'm like, how are they coming up with that number? I mean, 0.01% a year doesn't sound like they're doing it right. Just a general question is like, do they calculate, like, do you have, is there other ways to calculate shrinkflation in there? Have you seen these numbers before? Is this inaccurate? What I'm reading, is shrinkflation a bigger part? Because, you know, they're talking in the chat about their cereal boxes being smaller. I see it too. It's like they can't raise the prices because people are getting ticked off. So now they're lowering the size of it. Well, that's inflation in just a different way. Does the CPI calculate this?
Yes, CPI does calculate that. They do their best on that. I mean, it's fairly easy in the, you know, the food and the energy. You know, it's a 6-ounce jar instead of an 8-ounce. You can make that adjustment. So they do their best on that.
Okay, because it didn't sound like on that report that I read that it was 0.01% a year. It feels much more than 0.01% a year shrinkflation. Like 0.01% a year, we would never notice.
If you use a 100-year average, you're surely going to get it wrong. Things have changed a lot in the last couple of years.
We're on the line with Blue Putnam. He's the former director of economics over at the CME. Blue, a lot of this rally, a lot that's gone on is predicated on several rate cuts coming this year. And, I mean, just looking at the data that you're showing us, the inflation, I mean, I've tried to talk about stable for longer stance, but what are investors thinking, or what do you say to them? They're like, hey, you know, we're 3-4 cuts this year. What are we looking at?
Well, 3 or 4 cuts is kind of what the Fed's talking about now. I won't argue with that. It you know, if they only do 2 or they do 4, it won't make much difference for the economy. It will matter for technology and some other stocks. The faster rates get down, you can get another stock rally. But in terms of the economy, it isn't going to make a difference. So if they want to wait a couple of months, let them wait, you know. But we're there. The language is very interesting. When you listen to the Fed, do they want to get to 2% or do they want to approach 2%? And we're definitely approaching 2%. We just aren't there except on one metric.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about, Blue. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, should the Fed change its inflation target rate from, you know, 2% to 2.5% or 3%? I mean, do you think, you know, we get a little bit closer to that 2% that they'd be willing to cut? And if they do, I mean, do you think it'll be like a straight line down in terms of the rates, or they could cut 25 basis points, be data dependent, maybe raise it back up? Or once they start cutting, they're cutting?
Once they start cutting, they're cutting. They really, really don't want to lower and then raise, right, which is one of the reasons why they delay to make sure that, you know, they don't want to be a source of volatility. Of course they are. I mean, you know, the guidance and the delaying and, you know, driving your car only through the rearview mirror, that sort of stuff is pretty tricky. But they don't want to reverse themselves. But they can also go quite slow. They can cut, skip, skip, cut, skip, skip. You know, they're going to be taking the stairs down, and it's going to be very slow unless we were to get a recession. I don't see one coming. I don't think it's going to happen. But if there was a recession, they would head for the elevator to get down fast.
Is there anything else? I mean, we talked about with some people were talking about with, you know, New York City Bank, and last year with Silicon Valley Bank, that the regional banks continued to suffer and potentially face a big collapse, that could encourage the Fed to cut faster. I mean, is there anything else out there besides that CPI number falling more that you think would encourage the Fed to start cutting sooner?
No. The New York Community Bank story is definitely a one-off. When we started hearing about it, it was all about commercial lending. But then we discovered that they owned a ton of loans to rent stabilized apartments in New York. That's a losing trade. So, you know, they have never, if you look at their 20-year stock price, it's only got one very short period where they did okay, and then they went right back down. It's a one-off. And now I will tell you that other regional banks that are not in trouble aren't going to grow very fast. Okay, they've had to tighten their credit standards. The compliance people from the regulators are going to be all over them. So loan growth from the regional banks is going to be very slow. And their stock prices are going to not take off. But they have recovered a little bit. But yeah, New York Community Bank. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you were buying the dip on those regional banks after the Silicon Valley Bank collapse last year, you were rewarded. But still looking at the charts, it's not like, you know, they're still not quite back to where they were before all that. And that's probably, you know, based off this higher interest rate environment, just not the same growth that you had seen in them in the years leading up to that. Well, Blue, you got anything else for us before?
I just got one. I mean, people are mentioning the debt here. Is the boogeyman, yes. And I mean it's not going away anytime soon, and it's getting bigger. So any comments on the U.S. debt and the future course of interest rates?
Yeah, so I look at the growth of government consumption and what their expenditures, what, you know, how fast are they growing? And during the pandemic, they took off like crazy, but they've gone back to pretty much trend. So I don't think fiscal policy is going to be providing much stimulus to raise inflation, and it's not going to dampen it much either. It's gotten back in neutral. If you are a fiscal policy analyst and you look at the budget deficit, which is 6%, and you know, $1 trillion of interest expense every year and things like that, you get pretty scared. But that's not the right number to look at. And then I'm talking to a lot of people that are trying to figure out who's buying the government debt. And I will tell you, you could tell me exactly who's buying the government debt, and I still couldn't tell you the 10-year. It's just not, the flow of funds is not a very good forecaster. Actually, it's quite bad. So I'm really focused on government consumption expenditure growth. They're not going to be able to do that no matter who wins the election, because the deficits are too high to expand spending. So to me, fiscal policy is back in neutral after having been hugely inflationary.
Blue Putnam, former chief economist to CME, he's been guiding us through this inflation picture for the last couple of years. Really appreciate it. Economics that everyone can understand. Blue, thank you much, and we'll see how those numbers turn out. We'll be dialing you up next month. Feel better.
That sounds good.
Thanks, Blue.
All right, S&P's off the lows of the session. I just want to give a shout out to all of our listeners here. We got a ton of people watching us on Twitter. So if you want to tweet at Dennis or at Benzinga with the stock symbol, we want to give you guys a shout out. We got a ton of people watching us out there on Twitter. So thanks for joining us this morning. AB, where are we going?
Let's go. Last Friday, we had some upgrades, some analyst ratings in Celsius. We didn't get a chance to talk about it on this show. Stifel, well, actually a new one this morning as well. Stifel maintains buy on Celsius, raises price target to 95. This has been one of your high flyers this year so far, and it looks like some of the analysts are still bullish on Celsius Holdings. Again, this is the hottest energy drink out there. Taking some market share from Red Bull, taking some market share from Monster. And Dennis, they just recently launched in Canada. Have you tried it yet?
No. I think my kid has, though, actually.
What?
I think,
you don't want that? Celsius. Too much caffeine for the kid.
Yeah, is that what it is? Yeah, they're 9. This is what they do for the hockey game. We got them all pumped up. Okay. I don't know. Is there an age limit? Maybe it's not Celsius that he tried then. There's a bunch.
Well, the kids love the Prime. The kids love the Prime.
It's Prime. That's what it is. Is that one chucked full of caffeine too? The Prime?
Well, Prime has a sports drink like that's like a
What they're drinking. Well, it's no, the Prime. The, you're right. The green Prime he's got.
Prime
I thought
has
it was Celsius,
a sports drink.
Prime. You're right.
Prime has a sports drink that's similar to a Gatorade, but then they also have a caffeinated, energy
it's
drink.
It's Prime.
Too.
They're all drinking Prime. The kids are on the hockey bench drinking Prime. This is what it is. You're right. So it's not Celsius, but. What a comeback for the stock.
I know.
I mean, this stock was in the gutter, falling down, beginning of February, so just over a month ago, was just hanging out with that $50 support. And then boom, 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 boom. We're back at highs.
Oh, I looked at that 50. It just stared me in the face for so long. Look at that, December. And I'm like, someone just wants to own that stock. But, I mean, you got the upgrade today. I would just say pair of lows. I like to see it hold 87.50. That's a pair of lows in the last two sessions. And if you're looking for a new all-time closing high, that was made on Thursday at 89.56. The all-time high was made on Friday, just above that. And I would say, don't ask me, don't ask Dennis, don't ask AB about this stock. Ask Todd Gordon. Todd Gordon has been all over this stock. He discussed it several times on the closing print. I will dial Todd up, but he was just very patient with this stock. I did try it once. I mean, I can't tell the difference with those things. I mean, I have my
taste. That's why I can't either. I thought Prime, Celsius, Monster, they're all the same dang thing.
I've never had a Monster. No, man, I just get my Costco coffee, man.
I think Celsius is tries to market itself as being slightly healthier than, you know, a Red Bull or Monster. And I don't know. Just from what I've seen, you know, anecdotally here in the office, people are do drink a lot of them. Another kind of similar story stock, you know, been doing well on set to report earnings before the open tomorrow. I see a lot of the same people, like Jonah Lupton is in on and Celsius, kind of the same like trend. And it's the similar thing. Like you at the gym, you see people drinking Celsius. I see more and more people wearing these on-ons. I just like looking at other shoe stocks, it seems like they haven't really done that well historically. Obviously, you have, some outliers like Crocs, if you got in at Crocs at the right time. But, I mean, Allbirds went public via SPAC and went to zero, you know, all this stuff. So it's like, I just worry that is this thing a fad? Are these on-ons here to stay? I mean, they've got a global reach. They've got Federer backing it, you know, Swiss company. So it could be interesting. I'm just very tentative on it, again, based on what I've seen from other shoe companies out there.
Sometimes these fads stick around for a lot longer than you think, though. Like Crocs is probably the best example here. You know, we all thought 10 years ago, here's the shoe store that put holes in the shoes, and, you know, eventually you're going to get a holy stock. Well, that has not been the case. Crocs has just been a monster. It's grown and grown, and they just don't stop buying these things. So there are cases where fad stocks, which Crocs definitely was, just stick around, and you know the stocks can continue to grow. I looked at this once from a valuation perspective. Let's do it again. We'll bring up our trusty Benzinga Pro here right now. Just look, you know, quick, you know, financials on it, looking at the PE. 36 times forward earnings, 121 times current earnings. So they're expected to grow. The growth rate is significant. Revenue growth, 68% year over year. So it was significant as well. $10 billion company is not insane. This is the first time I'm analyzing this. I'm just reading the numbers here. Uh-huh. You know, just looking at growth numbers, looking at knowing where the current P is, where the forward P is. So, you know, could it grow into this valuation? It could. It's a smaller company. You know, but, you know, you think about like Crocs been around for a long time, 10 billions. Well, that's what Crocs only worth 7 billion. It's been around for a long time. So you got to be careful just paying up too much, because sometimes these things are already priced like, you know, they're a dominant player in the industry. And, you know, even sometimes they're not.
I see the shoes all the time. Some of them don't have ties on it. So like when I'm in the gym, I got to have ties on my shoes. I mean, they're okay. I'll just talk about it technically, and it's got over $30 a couple times since the middle of last year, and it hasn't held. But you know what? You got a pair of lows just above 32. I won't talk about that potential head and shoulders top there with the left shoulder in early February and a little bit of the right shoulder in March. But as long as it holds this $31.80, $32 area, why not take a shot? The high of the move currently comes in at 35.58, did break a 5-day losing streak on Friday, up in a red tape. So you got to be impressed with that.
And yeah, reporting tomorrow night, the expected move. I can't, is there no, where's the merch options?
I got tomorrow pre-market.
Is it pre-market tomorrow? Okay. Yeah. Well, I just have a tomorrow. I was too lazy to write down AM or PM, so I have all the tomorrow stocks. I should have wrote down AM. So tomorrow morning, going to report.
All right, we've got about a minute left. I see Marshall in the chat asking about Apple. I mean, Apple sitting right at this 170 level, probably a pretty important level for Apple. I haven't heard too much. I know we talked about the Vision Pro, you know, some people returning it. I haven't heard, I guess, in terms of like the actual material sales, though, if the sales have been less or more than expected. But at some point, it's got to be time to come in and buy the dip on Apple, right?
Do you want to know why Apple is up today? Because Nvidia is down. And it is just, this is recent, but it is very apparent. If your pair is trading and finding relationship-based trading right now, Apple is just algorithmically being traded against Nvidia. It's not going to be forever, but right now it is. Nvidia goes down, Apple goes up. Nvidia goes up, Apple goes down. They're both major components, and that's what the ETF effects are doing to it. They're moving them in the opposite direction. You can look at it. Apple's been straight down here on this recent Nvidia run-up since it broke down from 180. Nvidia was obviously straight up. The reversal day for Nvidia on Friday caused a reversal day for Apple, and Apple actually spiked into the Nvidia sell-off here. Then, you know, it sold off towards the end of the day because they started selling the whole everything off at the end of the day. They were selling on Friday. But, I mean, you know, in the short term, you can just see these trends, and Apple is inversely correlated. It's not going to last, but right now, Apple's inversely correlated with Nvidia.
You got a trio of lows under 169. We talked about the 170 area, and you just feel, who's buying back the stock? Well, maybe the company decided to buy some back at that 170, or institutions trying to cover shorts. You almost got a gap fill on Friday. Look at that. You had the gap down day once, I believe it was on the European news. 173.79 was your low on that day. You got up to 173.70. So that's $2 away. I'd say if you want to have a real big, you know, day or week for Apple, start to work your way into this candle, because just as we came down through this area pretty quickly, could go back up, and just seems like we got some work to do, you know? Like, that's what Apple does. It has a move, and then it has some work to do, and then it comes down, gets everybody. That 180 was huge, but I'd say maybe not bolting the 174 today, but if you could establish a higher bid here, maybe get some good news. They need an announcement. I mean, they need something. Like, what? Like, Apple's got to wow us with something until, you know, to get back in the scoring mode to get back. No, they haven't.
They haven't wowed us, Joel, in a very, very long time. This isn't like, they haven't wowed us in a couple of weeks. They haven't wowed us in years. You know, and the Apple Vision Pro, look, it was wowing me. I was, like, impressed with the product, but the market was not. And the market, you know, the consumer market is, you know, what you've got to look at. Consumers are saying it's too expensive and it gives me a headache. So I'm like,
I've worked a long time on that. I've kind of been swinging back and forth on the Vision Pro thing, because at first I was like, I hate this. I don't want to start seeing people wearing them around. And then I was like, you, Dennis, where I was like, oh, my God, this is like going to be a game changer. And then
it's really cool.
And then it was disappointing. And then now I'm starting to think more again. OK, this is just the first iteration. Let's wait and see. Like, I'm sure there were people that. You know, when the iPhones first came out, thought, okay, this is silly. You know, people aren't going to all have these. And then people didn't like the AirPod.
They didn't, though, Aaron. That was the difference. Sometimes you just know. This is such a good point you're making. Sometimes you just know when you see a product, like, oh, my gosh, that's going to be huge. And, you know, I gave this story, you know, my trading partner at Bright Trading, Chris Banier, had, you know, the original, you know, went from the iPod to the, you know, thing, and he's flipping through and looking at the songs and was like, oh my gosh, that is the coolest thing ever. So sometimes you just know, Aaron, and if you're like flipping back and forth, I'm flipping back and forth, it's probably not as game-changing of a product as we thought, because you know what a game-changing products are? When everybody says, oh my gosh, you got to get one of these. That's the difference. So if we're flipping, I think it's not the game changer.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think there's a chance still that in 5 years you're seeing these, you know, Vision Pros have more utility and people wearing them more, but I could be wrong, and I don't really want that. Like, I was thinking about it, and I was like, would I like to be in a society where every kid in a classroom is wearing one of these Vision Pros and doing, you know, no, like, that doesn't sound good to me. I don't think that'd be healthy, but we'll see. I mean, I've talked to some other guys, you know, people that are, you know, older than me, adults that are like, oh, this is awesome. You know, I can wear it at home and work and have both my screens up and whatever and walk around the house. And so we'll see. Like I said, I'm wishy-washy on it. And to your point, Dennis, that probably means that it's not as you know, as much of a sure thing as some of Apple's products in the past. But Apple's got a good track record with this stuff, so we'll keep following the story and we'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, Steve Jobs has a good track record with this stuff. I'm still arguing there hasn't been a hell of a lot of like a new, really cool product that's just come out of nowhere since Steve Jobs been gone. So that's an issue.
I like the chip story with Apple too, long term. I think that's something that's being under talked about right now at the market, that Apple's developing its own chips and apparently they're very, very strong. But again, these are things that will take some time to play out.
Yeah, and Apple worked on a car for the better part of a decade and then scrapped it too. So we need some products to market that don't give you a headache.
There you go. Or give
and if you wore those in class, I mean, everyone would fall asleep. I mean, the teacher wouldn't even be able to tell if the students were paying attention. So I don't know if I want to see that. But we're going to wrap things up today a little bit late. S&P's on the recovery here, only down 18.5 handles. See if we can get back to mid-range on the session. Tomorrow is T3 Tuesday. We're going to have one of our guests come and talk to us after that all-important CPI report. Oracle after the close. We'll see some price action in that. Folks, thanks for setting your clock and getting that daylight savings time in. That's it. We're wrapping it up today on Pre-Market Prep.
Yep, finally that sun coming up behind me. And again, we do have live trading starting right after this. The stream will redirect you there. Smash the like if you haven't already, and please subscribe to the channel. We will see you guys tomorrow, bright and early.